You've tuned in to Soundcast Stereo. I'm Christopher Coleman. I'm on Channel 1, and I'm a spy. I'm a spy.
And I'm Kristen Romanelli, Managing Editor of FilmScore Monthly Online. I'm on Channel 2, and I've had my fill of the evils of man's world.
Soundcast Stereo episodes are two-channel, 30-minute-ish conversations focused on a single topic from the world of film, television, or video game soundtracks. You can find all of the episodes of the Soundcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play Podcast, Acast, or at thesoundcast.com. You can send us all of your lovely feedback at soundcastattractions.com or use our SpeakPipe widget to leave us a voicemail or hit us up on Track Sounds, or what I mean by that is hit us up on Twitter at Track Sounds or on Facebook.
Today is Sunday, June 4th, 2017, and this is episode 19, where Chris and I discuss the recently released original score for Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman is a 2017 American superhero film based on the DC Comics character of the same name. It's been distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures and is the fourth installment in the DC Extended Universe. The film is directed by Patty Jenkins with a screenplay by Ellen Heinberg and a story by Heinberg, Zack Snyder, and Jason Fuchs. Gal Gadot stars as the titular character with Chris Pine, Robin Wright, Danny Hudson, David Thewlis, Connie Nielsen, and Elena Anaya in supporting roles. Wonder Woman is the first live-action theatrical film starring the character following her first live-action theatrical appearance in 2016's Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. In the film, after the American pilot Steve Trevor crashes offshore off the island of Themyscira and tells Diana Prince about World War I, Diana leaves her home to try to stop the war. Wonder Woman premiered in Shanghai on May 15th, 2017 and was released in the United States on June 2nd, 2017. And it's projected to gross some $223 million worldwide in its opening weekend. And of course, the original score was composed by Rupert Gregson Williams. Kristen, what did you think of Wonder Woman, the movie? At long last, it's here.
At long last. It was good. It was really good. When do we start the DC expanded universe? Does it start with Batman Begins?
I think not. That's what I used to think, but
does it begin with Man of Steel?
I think so.
Is their best movie.
There will be no arguments on that point here today.
If it starts with Batman Begins, it's their second best movie, because then, you know, Dark Knight is just like beautiful.
Yeah.
But this, if we're starting with Man of Steel, this is by far their best movie.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. Now, it's interesting, though, if we did include the Dark Knight trilogy, you would put this above Batman Begins and The Dark Knight Rises. Is that so?
I hate Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I do like Batman Begins, but I would have to rewatch it. Liam Neeson, I love him so much.
I was just going to bring that up. I was just going to bring that up. I say, well, you're being highly objective if you're saying that. I agree with you. I found it to be the best of what I think is defined as the DCEU, which excludes Nolan's films. If we included them, I think it would probably be the fourth best, because I like the Dark Knight trilogy all the way through quite a bit, even Dark Knight Rises. But it's kind of like that. It's kind of like the gap between, let's say, The Force Awakens and the prequels. It's like that. It's not like it's just barely better than the previous three. It's like way, way better.
It is way better.
But
save for the framing device, which I did not like. But
So let me just put in there, we're going to be talking spoilers. So if you haven't seen the film yet, please do see it and then listen to this podcast. That'll just make it easier for Kristen and I to be able to talk freely about the film and the score. Yeah, so the framing device being the whole memory thing, seeing the picture and all of that, right?
Yeah, I
guess it didn't bother me too much. I did wonder how they were going to, no pun intended, how they were going to tell the story. I just thought it was going to start off at Themyscira and just go forward. So I was a little surprised how it started, actually.
But yeah.
But it didn't bother me too much. Go ahead.
Framing devices in general bother me. Mm. So it's more of a narrative choice that I dislike in general.
Okay.
Not in this specific instance.
Gotcha. So I thought the movie was good. Good to very good. It has some issues, or I have some issues with it, but nothing that completely ruined the movie. I thought the villain was the revelation of the villain and all of that was kind of weak.
I thought it was amazing.
I kind of called it in my brain.
Really?
Yeah, because it was too, they set up everything too obviously. And I'm like, there's no way that, what was his name? Lugenmeier, whatever his name was going to end up being the big baddie, that Ares.
Oh, just, yeah, that's absolutely true. Except I called Dr. Poison as Ares.
Oh, I knew it was one of the two. And I thought, because David Thewlis, is that all you're going to do in this movie? I'm like, can't be. You've got to. But the bad part was he couldn't pull off Ares for me. I mean, when he goes into Ares form, I was like, no, I can't. I just couldn't go there with him. I thought
thought it was so great though, because that armistice further destroys Europe. Like,
yeah,
that is what makes Europe descend into World War II.
Sure.
And further, and causes decades of,
sure,
you know, strife. I thought it was
the beat of it, yes, but David, yeah, Thewlis as Ares, you know, when he puts his armor on and he kind of peels his face or his mask so you can see his face, I'm just like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
David Thewlis in there. It's just, that was very distracting to me that he didn't lose that facade or something. I don't know. It's like, why are you still David Thewlis? You should be something else. I don't know. It was just distracting to me. And somehow it just didn't kind of jibe in the end. Other little things, but overall, you know, I came out having a really good time and was really happy that I had a good time, that it didn't come out disappointed yet again. And the tone was, I like the tone that they struck. And I like the bits of humor. I thought the one lady, his assistant lady, was going to be in the film a lot more, because her in the trailer was very annoying. And I was like, this is not what I'm looking for.
She is a major character in the comics, so at least in the Golden Age comics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad. Does she have that same personality in the comics?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm glad she wasn't in the movie anymore than she was. It was just enough. Oh. It was nice. It was a nice little spritz of comedy, but I don't think I could have handled too much more of her. Did you have any other thoughts about the film itself that you like to mention?
I loved the portrayal of Diana.
Yeah.
She was so earnest and,
yes,
good-hearted.
Yes.
And I think it was perfect,
yes,
for her. Like, earnest, good-hearted,
yes,
and not willing to back down from a fight.
Yes.
It's such a fantastic blend of that, you know, the feminine energy with,
yes,
that battle readiness,
yes,
that I love in Wonder Woman.
Yes.
And they, perfect, just absolutely perfect.
I'm so glad you said that, because that was something that I meant to say as well. Because this could have gone in a lot of different directions, and I didn't know what they were going to do with her. First off, let me say, Gal Gadot can act. Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
I've heard people really, really rail on her acting in BVS. I'm like, one, she had, what, 5-6 lines? I mean, what was there to rail against?
Yeah, and she was like the best
things.
Thing in it.
Exactly. I was just like, what are you saying? What are you measuring her acting on in that film? In this film, she was great. I mean, not especially when she wasn't, not especially when, but I noticed in particular when she wasn't talking, she was just reacting, and it's just facial reactions. Like, this lady can act. I was really, really impressed with her acting, and I genuinely liked her as a character. I thought she brought this woman to life. And I'm so glad that, just as you point out, that they didn't just make her a man, basically. Right.
Yeah.
They kept her a woman. They kept her femininity about her, but yet made her strong and made her a leader. And I was like, that's perfect.
Right. She can be a warrior and she can be like, baby.
Yes. Yes.
Because there are no babies on Themyscira.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. All of that was brilliant. And that's what I think I like. It's a good thing that the main character is the best thing you like about the film. But it's true. She was the best thing about the film, the acting, the portrayal, but how she was written as well. I thought it was really, right. really well done. And I was 100% behind her and just, I don't know, they just did a really, really good job. Patty Jenkins did a really good job in directing
yeah.
her.
And once again, that is 100% true to her character in the comics. The ice cream bit, that comes from both it was done in the comics as well as the Justice League movie, Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
The animated one.
Yep, which was excellent.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to echo that point because she was fantastic. And I have hope for the DCEU now. I don't know what Justice League will be like in the end, but I think her part in it will be good.
Yeah.
And so there's a flicker of hope. Well, and Joss Whedon's involved, so there's more than a flicker of hope for that. All right. Well, that's our thoughts on the movie as a whole. The main question we're going to ask today really is, did the Wonder Woman motif work? Because that's probably been the biggest question in terms of film music. The film music side of this film leading up to the film was, are they going to bring it back? Will it work? Blah, 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 blah. At least that's the question I was asking a lot. But before we even dive into that question specifically, what's your reaction to Rupert Gregson-Williams' score in general?
Yeah. I mean, it's it's not really my favorite style of score. I mean, it definitely fits in.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But it's, there are things that I definitely liked. I definitely liked instrumentation choices and the orchestration. But the general style is definitely in keeping with an action style I'm not really a fan of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I get you. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it fits really well into the DCEU. I think it has a bit in common with The Dark Knight, even more so than like Man of Steel or BVS. There's a track called The God of War where that could almost have come from somewhere in The Dark Knight. A trilogy. Yeah. You know, it's very, very Zimmery, kind of action-y, menacing sort of deal. And I felt myself thinking about that, kind of listening through. There's a very nice elegy at the end of Wonder Woman's Wrath. After you go into that really intense track, it kind of ends with this very melancholic elegy. And I thought it was really kind of, it's very Tron-like in a way, and I found myself connecting and enjoying that. I think their love theme is great. It's unabashed. It's not just some kind of symbolic love theme with, you know, two instruments intertwining, but it's just a love theme, you know, and it's unabashed, and I really enjoyed that Rupert Gregson-Williams was able to go there and just do that without trying to make it some modern interpretation of a love theme. It's just a love theme. And lastly, I just had a question because there's the last track, and I believe it's what plays over at least the first part of the end credits, called Action Reaction. And it's like, it's brand new. There's no earlier reference or use of it in the film that I could recall. And it stood out to me because I saw the film with my sister and she was kind of like grooving to it. And she's like, oh, I know you really like this score, huh? And I'm like, well, there are parts of it I like, not maybe not this track as much, and that's what called my attention to it. And then when I went to listen, it's like, this music wasn't referenced anywhere in the whole score, as far as I could tell. Do you know about that piece at all?
I sort of felt that over the credits also. Well, first I was like, why is there a pop song here during the credits?
Oh, the one by Sia and whatchamacallit. Yeah. Yeah. Not that one, though, but the one before it.
Yeah, but before, yeah. and then when I came back home a couple days later, I noticed someone on Twitter mentioned that about this piece of music. And it's kind of a strange choice to put something unconnected over the credits. Maybe he had this extra piece and they didn't know where to put it.
Yeah, it's strange. I fully expected the full-on Wonder Woman theme to play over the credits. I mean, I just expected it. Maybe it was his Wonder Woman theme that he's like, oh, I've got one that we might want to use or something. But didn't, I don't know. It was just, it just seemed a very odd place to introduce a whole new piece of music.
I mean, I was kind of hoping for his own Wonder Woman theme.
Yes, as was I. But we both know. I knew going in that the odds were highly.
There are people who do like that motif.
Yes.
Very much so. I live with one.
Right.
Who came out with saying, like, I wanted more of the Wonder Woman motif. And I was like, are you crazy?
It is memorable. I have to say, you know, every time I hear it, it sticks in my brain for a while. You know what I mean? It is sticky. I'll give it that.
It sticks in my brain because I'm cringing so hard. That was mean. I'm sorry.
No, I don't. I think there's probably a few out there who share that reaction.
But it's true.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Subconsciously, you know, in my head, I'll be and I'm like, I don't even like this motif, but here I am, humming it or whistling or whatevering it, and it's like, how does it do that? How do they do that? I don't even like it. How is it there?
That seems to be the gold standard that film score fans have been saying they're looking for years and years and years, and here we have it, and it's a curse.
Yeah, in this case, kind of a little bit. was there anything in general you wanted to say more about the score before we talk about that motif a little bit more?
Just that to be positive, to end on a positive note, I really loved the use of cello in this score, both acoustic and electric cello, especially in reference to Themyscira and the Amazons. I thought it was a great instrument choice for them. It's a strong instrument. It's a very human sounding instrument. Really, really beautiful choice for that.
I think the only thing that would have been better would have been a viola, right?
Oh, I love the viola.
I know, that's why I said it.
Oh, man, you're making me rethink this whole thing. The cello has more heft, and I think that's good for an Amazon, you know?
Okay, I agree. I agree. So that's going to be the heart of our episode today, answering the question, did the Wonder Woman motif work? Of course, it was introduced in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. Out of nowhere came Wonder Woman and also came her motif. It was the only part of the music that stuck with anyone, I think, or most people. Certainly myself, I mean, because it was the only really clearly definable motif in the whole film. I couldn't tell you. If you played it, I would know, oh, yeah, that's probably from Batman v Superman. But I couldn't hum anything or construct anything from that score other than that motif. Because it's in very stark contrast to all the droning and drumming and bumbling and bumping and moaning. You know, and then you just have this quote-unquote electric sort of vibe that just jumps out of nowhere at you. Of course it's going to stand out. So do you think the bringing of that motif into this film, did it work for you?
I guess. I mean, I'm not enthusiastic about it. As I said, I dislike that theme. Mm-hmm. It's not even a theme, it's a motif. Mm-hmm. And I do like that it does the earning a motif journey through mm-hmm. the film. Like, yep. it starts when she crosses her bracers and causes that reaction when she's training. Mm-hmm. And she's looking at them and they sort of hint at that motif. I thought that was great. And it starts to build through the score as, you know, she goes into battle and it comes into its full effect in No Man's Land, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that thing, that sort of journey in general. I just do not like the motif itself.
Yeah. Well, I think it actually starts earlier. I think if you know that very first track and in the very beginning of the movie, the very first couple of distinguishable notes, because you get a few little indistinguishable murmury kind of notes. You get the first two notes of the motif on the cello.
Yes. I did notice that when I was doing my listen through of the score itself.
And he does do that throughout, leading up to that point that you were talking about when you get a more fuller statement of it. But I love that. I mean, I love that because I don't have the greatest ear in the world. But when the movie started and I heard those notes, I was like, oh, nice. Because I didn't listen to the score prior to seeing the film. And so I was locked in right there. I was like, okay, it's not going to just be all of this music unrelated. And then all of a sudden, here comes that motif out of nowhere. Right. I love that he was able to do that and kind of backtrack. And although it doesn't feel like a natural jump from what he did to that. I mean, it's still when it makes its full appearance in No Man's Land, it's like, whoa, it's still kind of harsh. And it pulled me out of that moment, even though it's a great, you know, action moment, it pulls me out. Yes, I think it works in terms of the motif. I like the motif itself. I'm just not a fan of that, the main execution of it on the electric cello. I don't think it fits in this film. I don't think it fits her character. Although I understand what it's trying to represent, I think it could have been represented in a lot of different ways, more effective ways. Ways that weren't so contrasty to the environment and the setting of everything.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah.
Everything Chris just said, I think.
I'm saving your streppy throat from having to say all those words.
Oh, thank you. there was a motif in there, and I think it might be what was used as a love theme. It's in No Man's Land, and it starts right before the Wonder Woman motif shows up. It's the bum 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 bum.
Oh, uh huh, uh huh.
Yeah, that one. I like that better as a motif for her character.
I agree.
Like speaking to her character and what she represents. And
yes.
Why not that?
I don't. maybe it was that, and then they said no. Everyone seems to love the motif from BVS. So
no, but I love that motif.
I will say, you know, part of the you mentioned it earlier. Part of the thing with what's so good about Wonder Woman's character in this film is that, you know, there is the earnestness, there is the somewhat innocence, but yet, you know, just the inherent good that she is and wants to do, and that's what Superman is supposed to be. And that's why it doesn't, that's why, you know, he's not Superman. He's Man of Steel. That's what I call him. This isn't Superman. He's Man of Steel, which is, in my mind, another character. I know why they're trying to treat him that way, even though it just causes all kinds of logic problems within this universe. But that's, she's captured the feeling and the character that I want, have wanted, or I have enjoyed being in Superman. And that's what I missed in Man of Steel and BVS, is that this is some other dude who's more like Batman than he is like the traditional Superman. And so it was good to have that feeling back. And that's where the motif is in contrast to me. It's And as I put on Twitter, I didn't connect it specifically to this film, but I'll do it now. You know, people are, oh, kick-ass motif is kick-ass. And like, well, yeah, there's kick-ass and then there's heroic.
Yeah.
And her motif is not heroic to me. It can be treated in a heroic way, but that main electric cello statement of it is not heroic. It is kick-ass, but it's not heroic. It's not inspirational to me.
Right. I feel like it worked in Batman versus Superman because in her introduction is supposed to have that sort of impact.
Mm-hmm.
You see her, you know, thrown, you know, across the battlefield.
Yeah.
And you just see that look on her face where she's like, yes, this is a battle that is worthy of me.
Yeah.
And she just like goes right back into it.
Yeah.
And that fits that moment so well. But when you're building up a character and you're showing other aspects of her and the other parts that make her Wonder Woman, then there should be something more than simply being kick-ass.
Mm-hmm.
Because we already know that she's kick-ass.
Right.
But that earnestness, that goodness, that optimism, that faith in humanity,
mm-hmm.
that's what I want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And would continue to be such a great contrast to the cynicism of a Batman and apparently the cynicism of a Man of Steel. I mean, what a great contrast to have her as that. So hopefully they can make the most of that as we go into Justice League. I don't know. I guess Junkie XL has already announced as scoring that. Is that so?
I sort of vaguely remember that, but I can't say for sure.
I can't say for sure either. Somehow that's just my own cynicism. Like, well, I shouldn't say cynicism, pessimism. I don't know. It's just assuming that that's going to be the case, but we shall see. So let's start wrapping up. But with this kind of related question, do you think having that motif, the Wonder Woman motif being introduced in BVS, helped or hurt Wonder Woman and its score?
I'm going to say it probably hurt because they continued to use it. It's, as I said, it's a musically shallow representation of Diana
mm-hmm.
as a character. So, yes, I'm going probably to say it hurt being introduced and continuing mm-hmm. through it. Although I think Gregson Williams did the best he could with mm-hmm. it by doing the whole hero's journey,
mm-hmm.
earning the motif.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was really good for them in terms of marketing and that they could throw it into the trailers and all that. Everyone remembers, oh, Wonder Woman from BVS. I love it. You know, got people, I got some people hyped. Definitely got people talking, whether they enjoy the motif or not prior to. But
it's definitely distinctive.
Yes, it is. There's no way around that. I think, I don't know if it hurt or not. I think the inclusion of it in Wonder Woman hurts Wonder Woman in its BVS state. I think it would have been great if he's just built up, but never used it like that in the score would have been fine. Or if they put it in the end credits or something. And then, but you know, he makes a very clear statement of it, a very mm-hmm. aggressive and, you know, powerful and strong statement of it, but not that exactly, which then gives it room to grow. I mean, what, how many years, 100 years between the end of this and BVS, you know, gives it some room to grow into that. You know what I mean? I think people from the marketing side, I think people are like, oh, we wanted to hear it. Like, why didn't they play it on the electric cello, you know, or guitar, as I would have thought had I not been corrected on it.
I could have sworn it was guitars.
That's what it sounds like to me. But hey, I mean, it makes more narrative sense since she's using the cello to represent Themyscira and all that. Makes perfect sense. But I think it would have been good to have built it up. Quite a ways, very distinctive and strong, but not that exactly. So it being in BVS, I don't think hurt it. I think using the same exact execution of it hurt it. And I wish
it certainly helped it marketing wise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she has the most distinctive motif in the whole DCEU.
It's just an artistic mailing.
Yeah. Where does it rank for you? Let's leave out the Dark Knight trilogy, but where does the score rank for you out of the four films?
Ooh.
I'll just say, for me, it's second only to Suicide Squad. I think Steve
Price.
Yeah, I think he did an excellent job on that score. It doesn't get much talk, but I think that score is pretty doggone good. Easily beating out Man of Steel and BVS. And I would say this is only second to that. Even though Man of Steel has some good moments, this is a strong number two for me.
I hate to say, I haven't really given that much of a listen to Stephen Price's score. Probably will right
you
after
should.
This.
Yeah, you should.
I enjoy him. So, because I can't speak to that, I would probably put this first. The only thing I struggle with is, and we discussed this on a show years ago, I think, Man of Steel, I really enjoyed Zimmer's initial themes for that. And I think I had expressed how disappointed I was that that wasn't actually the expression that was used within the film. But his initial sketchbook, the stuff that turned up in the trailers, I loved that so much.
Yeah,
I would put the sketchbook first.
Okay, gotcha.
And then this, and then Wonder Woman, certainly.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I highly recommend checking out Suicide Squad score. I think that was a baby bathwater sort of situation where it's just like, we hate Suicide Squad, and then no one even bothered.
Well, the thing is, I didn't entirely hate Suicide Squad. I just, I don't know.
Oh. Yeah.
There's a lot happening.
Understatement for sure. Yeah, there is a lot happening. I think, though, that to wrap up this, Wonder Woman bodes well for the DCEU. Hopefully they'll continue along this track and throw some life into their superhero films, throw some optimism, some heroism in their superhero films, that humans tend to like to connect to those sorts of ideas and themes. It's great to have contrast, you know.
Yeah.
It tends to make things work better when you have some contrast. So let's hope they're taking notes. And kudos to Patty Jenkins. She did a very good job. And looking forward to her doing more in this world. And I'm sure she probably will. Do you have any final thoughts about Wonder Woman and the score?
Great movie, okay score. Sort of makes me wonder what Patty Jenkins would have done with Thor 2 if she had not departed. With Carter Burwell doing the score.
I don't know if I can swallow all of that, but yeah. It would definitely have been interesting. We're about to get an interesting Thor score, I think, no matter what.
Yeah, yeah,
something
that's true.
Very different. All right, excellent. Well, I think that's going to wrap up this edition of Soundcast Stereo. This is episode 19, where we talked about the Wonder Woman score. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the movie or the score itself. And if you'd like to share your innermost thoughts about those things, go ahead and reach out to us and give us your feedback by email at soundcast@trackzones.com. Leave us a voicemail on our SpeakPipe widget. We're on Twitter @TrackSounds or on Facebook. If you want to find and follow me personally, you can do that on Twitter @CColeman. So, Kristen, where can people find and follow you?
The best place to find me is Twitter at KB for now. That's KBFOR now. And FilmScore Monthly Online can be found at fsmonlinemag.com. And the May issue is finally out, and we're working on the June issue.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And until our next episode, I completely forget what my closer is for this one. So, bye.